Now let's stand together and read from this wonderful book that tells us about that love. All right, turn your Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 31. 2 Chronicles 31. All right, look there at verse 21. Verse 21. And thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah, and wrought that which was good and right and truth before the Lord his God. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, and in the law and in the commandments to seek his God, he did it with all his heart and prospered. All right. Let's pray.
Thank you, Brother Chandler. Someone might ask, why should we be interested in people with funny names who lived 3,000 years ago? Well, the Bible gives us the answer in Romans chapter number 15 and verse number 4, when it says that whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. By the way, they didn't just have funny names in Bible days. People still have funny names. Hezekiah is not any funnier than or more unusual than many of the names we hear these days. And Hezekiah was one of the best kings in Judah's history. He wasn't raised to be a godly king, but he was by his own choice. His father was an idol worshiper. But when Hezekiah was a young man, he began seeking out the old paths of David. And verse number 2 of chapter 29, if you'll leave your Bibles open, we'll look at several passages together, and you'll be a lot less bored in church if you follow along in the Scriptures. In 2 Chronicles 29, verse number 2, it says that he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that David his father had done. Now understand that he was 10 generations removed from David his father, but he sought out the old paths that David had trod and instituted them in his own life. It's interesting to compare Hezekiah to the previous generations in his family. For example, notice in chapter 28 and verse number 1, his father Ahaz. 28 verse 1. Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. But he did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord like David his father. So Hezekiah's father, when he was making his decisions, he chose not to walk in the paths of David. He chose not to do that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Notice in chapter 27 and verse 2, Hezekiah's grandfather, Jotham. Verse 2 says, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Uzziah did. Howbeit, he entered not into the temple of the Lord. Boy, I'd hate to raise my kids to the point where when they're grown, they don't even want to go in the house of God. But Uzziah, because he had usurped the priesthood and became a leper, his son was afraid to go into the house of God all the days of his reign. But Jotham chose not the ways of David, but chose the ways of his father. Now, notice in chapter 26 and verse 4. And we find Hezekiah's great-grandfather, Uzziah. Verse 4 says, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father, Amaziah, did. So when Uzziah was choosing his paths of life, he chose to follow his father Uzziah, and he did a lot of things that were right, but not like David had done. Notice in chapter 25, verse 1, Hezekiah's great-great-grandfather Amaziah. Verse 1 says, Amaziah was 20 and 5 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehoiada of Jerusalem. Verse 2, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. Do you see that? Now here's his great-great-grandfather. He does, you know, most people are not totally evil. Most people are going to do some things that are right. And Amaziah did some things that were right in the sight of God, but not like David. He chose to do things differently, and he did things without a perfect heart. His son did things like he did, without a perfect heart. His son did things like his father did, but would even go in the temple of God. And the people were corrupt. And then his son served idols instead of serving the Lord. And then Hezekiah came along and said, well, I don't think I should follow my father's path. He was an idol worshiper. And his father wouldn't even go in the temple, wouldn't even serve God. And his father did some things right, but not with a perfect heart. And he became proud and usurped his authority, and God had to strike him with leprosy. And I don't want to do things like his father, because he did some right things, but he didn't have a perfect heart. He wasn't really wholehearted in his service to God. And he went back 10 generations to David and followed his ways instead of those that had been trod by his previous generations, those that he had known. He chose to go back. You know, this statement was not made to Hezekiah. It was made years later. But Jeremiah said this: "Stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein." And Hezekiah, as a young man, 20 years old, 25 years old, became the king, but I think he'd already made some decisions before then. And when he was choosing his life and choosing the path that he would follow, he said, "I'm going to follow the old path. Man, this path is 10 generations old. This is the pathway of David, my great, 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 great grandfather. And I'm going to follow his path because that is the good way." And he led his nation in one of the greatest revivals of the Old Testament. They reinstituted the temple. The house of God had been locked shut. He opened the doors again. It had been filled with trash. He cleansed it out. There was a revival in 16 days, had 16 years of wickedness washed out of the house of God. He restored the priesthood. He encouraged the Levites. They reinstituted worship. They got back to the old music. You ought to study that. They went back and found the music of David and the instruments of David and reinstituted spiritual worship and spiritual music as opposed to the idolatrous music that had been taking place. And he led in a great revival. Went out and destroyed all the altars of Baal, burned down his temples, ran off his priesthood. And God blessed his kingdom, and everything that he did prospered. God blessed it. God prospered it. Tonight, I want to take these verses about Hezekiah and point out 7 characteristics of a prosperous Christian. 7 characteristics of a prosperous Christian. Number one is industry. Industry. Notice in chapter 31 and verse 20. Chapter 31, verse 20. "Thus did," you might circle "did" Hezekiah. Didn't just say he was going to do it. Boy, talk is cheap. Hezekiah did it. "Thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah and wrought." You ought to circle the word "wrought" or underline the word "wrought." "He wrought that which was good and right and truth before the Lord his God." He did things. He wrought things. He produced things. He was a man that was industrious. He was a worker. He was a producer. He was a planner, and he carried out his plans, and he brought industry into his nation. He didn't just say, "You know, the temple ought to be cleansed." He did it. He didn't just say, "You know, we ought to keep the Passover." He kept it. He didn't just say, "You know, we ought to build some castles and build up our armies and re-equip our military." He actually went out and built castles and built fortresses and raised up walls and built these great machines that were cunningly devised to throw arrows and stones long distances. He was a man who was industrious. Listen, people who prosper are industrious. People who prosper are industrious. They work, and they work hard. They don't just want stuff. They work to get stuff. They don't just dream. Benjamin Franklin said that industry need not wish. Oh, people sit around, "I wish I had this, and I wish I had that. I wish I could do this. I wish I could do that." You've got to have industry to have prosperity. Industrious students are the best students. Well, if you don't care, you're going to be an average or below average student all your life. If you're going to be a good student, you've got to be industrious. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, brother, there's a lot of folks today. They watch television shows about people starting businesses. Man, they think, "I'm going to be an entrepreneur, and I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to start my own business." And they think they can do that. They can be an entrepreneur and work 8 to 5 like they did when they were punching the time clock. If you're going to be an entrepreneur and be a businessman, you got to work harder than you've ever worked in your life. It's a whole lot different being the boss. And if you're going to have success, you've got to be industrious. Businessmen have to work hard. Parents that are successful with their children, they work hard at it. They don't just let their kids grow up like the dogs. Oh, I feed them every day. What else do they want? You know, I give them food and water, take them out twice a day. You've got to work hard as a parent. The guy who gets the promotion he doesn't get the promotion because he kisses up and he's married to the boss. Guys that get the promotion usually are the ones who work the hardest and have the most industry, and they're the most valuable in their company, and they get promotions while other guys sit around and complain about the boss and complain about management and complain about situations and do what's less than is expected of them. Industrious people prosper. Abraham Lincoln said, "Things may come to those who wait, but only those things left by those who hustle." What we often call success is simply the accumulated evidence of an industrious life. So often young people say, I'm 23 years old and I want everything that my parents had. Well, you can have everything that your parents had. Spend the next 20 years accumulating it. And people say, I'd like to have that kind of business, or I'd like to have that kind of position, or I'd like to be in that kind of financial situation. That's the accumulated evidence of an industrious life. It's not like the guy who was a multimillionaire and someone asked him, he said, how did you earn your millions? He said, it was during the Depression and I went and I bought an apple. And I polished that apple and I sold it and I bought two apples. And I polished those apples and sold those and I bought four apples. And I polished those and sold those and I bought eight apples. And I polished those and sold those and then my uncle died, left me $2 million. That's not how most people get prosperity. In fact, most millionaires, you can study it, there's lots of good books out there, The Millionaire Next Door and such as that. Most millionaires drive old beat-up cars or paid-off cars, and they live in comfortable houses. They're not all living on mansions overlooking the ocean. And they're prosperous because they work, they're industrious, and that certainly it matters also in spiritual life, that if you want to be a good Christian, you've got to work at it. It doesn't just happen. Those who are prosperous in their ministry, those who are prosperous and grow spiritually, those who have families that are Christian and love God, do so because they are industrious and they work hard to develop that kind of Christianity in themselves and in their families. So number one is industry. Number two is character. Verse 20 says, "He wrought that which was good and right and truth before the Lord his God." Notice, what he was doing, his industry, was that which was good, right, and truth. That's character. Well, there's a lot of people that are very industrious in things that don't matter. Certainly some are very industrious in things that are wicked. Are you with me? Ask police officers. Isn't it something? I've often said, if some of these guys who are trying to run illegal industries would work as hard in legitimate businesses as they do in their illegal industry, they would be wealthy. It just wouldn't be overnight. But they want it now, and they want to be the gangster, and they want to be in that dark side of society, and so they want the money now, and they'd rather sell marijuana or cocaine. And by the way, good night. What is wrong with us when one of the most popular TV shows in the United States is about a math teacher who turns into a meth producer? Give me a break. And Christians who watch stuff like that ought to get right with God. If people would work as hard to be honest as they are to be dishonest, they could have legitimate wealth, legitimate prosperity, not worry about going to prison over it. He had character. He was involved in that which was good and right and truth before the Lord. Goodness counts, right counts, truth counts. You know, isn't it something that if you ask most parents, what do you want most for your kids? Most of them would say, I want my kids to be happy. Not very many would say, you know, I hope my kids are good. I hope they're God-fearing and honest and decent and have character and they're good. Most people just, I want my kids to be happy. No matter what they do, as long as they're happy. How about raising our kids on purpose to be good and not just to be happy? I believe happiness comes from goodness, but that goodness ought to be our goal. Character counts. The most important thing we can impress upon our children is good character. Hezekiah couldn't see it in his daddy, his granddaddy, his great-granddaddy. So he went all the way back in the scriptures to David and said, there's goodness, there's truth, there's right. I'm going to be like David and follow his pattern. So character. Number three is initiative. Initiative, verse 21. It says, in every work that he began, you might circle, he began. Let me ask you this evening, who told Hezekiah what to do? Who told Hezekiah? Was there some priest? No. Was it his dad? Nope. Who told Hezekiah to cleanse the temple and reinstitute worship? Who told him to build up the defenses and to irrigate the fields and to do the many things that he did? The fact is that no one told him to do anything that he was doing. He took the initiative and did it himself. He could think for himself. He could recognize problems and find solutions without waiting for someone else to do it for him. Waiting for mama to come do it for him. Waiting for daddy to fix the problem. He could find the solution. He didn't need someone to tell him to do it. Why don't you do that? I've nagged you about it for 6 months. By the way, ladies, if your husband says he's going to do something, you don't have to nag him every 6 months about it. He'll do it sooner or later. But a person that has initiative, they will see what needs to be done, and they will do it. Do you want to be a leader? Boy, everyone says, I want to be a leader today. I'm going to be a leader of the church. I'm going to be a leader of the youth group. I'm going to be a leader of this. I'm going to be a leader of that. But they have no initiative. Someone always has to tell them what to do, or they're always waiting for someone else to do it for them, and they never step up and say, you know what, I'm going to fix this problem myself. Leaders have initiative. They are the ones who initiate what is being done. Develop the character trait of initiative if you want to prosper. Someone has said that success comes to the person who does today what you were thinking about doing tomorrow. I'm 38 years old. By the time I was 33, I had my earned doctorate. A lot of guys would like to have an education, but they don't have the initiative to get out and do it. I went to school, went to a 3-year school, and got a Bible diploma. And I have a lot of my friends doing great works all around the world that all they have is a 3-year Bible diploma. But I decided that in the area that I'm in, it's a very educated area, and I didn't want people to look down upon me or to think that I was uneducated because I didn't have a degree. So I went back to school after I was pastoring a church, and I earned a bachelor's degree. And then I earned a master's degree through correspondence, and then I earned a doctorate through correspondence. And there are a lot of guys who say, well, I wish I had, one of these days I'm going to get around to those things. Sooner or later, you've got to take the first step and start doing things. And you've got to take the initiative and make it happen. Those who have things that you would like started out by taking the initiative and getting those things while we're still sitting around waiting for things to fall in our laps. Have initiative. You know, hey kids, how about you make your own bed? How about you do your chores without being told to over and over again? How about you, if you see something that needs to be done, you walk around your house and you step over things that someone else left out. How about you say, you know what, I'm tired of stepping over that. How about I pick it up? Well, I didn't leave it there. So, pick it up. Get it out of the way. Well, that's not fair. Welcome to life. It'll have a way of coming back around to you. If something needs to be done, have initiative. I'm glad that, our kids often do what they're supposed to do without being told. In fact, sometimes I have to kind of take Joe and kind of pull him back. Sometimes he takes initiative and I'd really rather he didn't. Thank you, Joe, for taking the bus engine apart and putting it back together, but maybe next time we'll have a mechanic do that. I'm just kidding, Joe. Joe's often, Dad, I fixed this. Dad, I fixed that. Taking things apart, putting them back together. And I appreciate that. But it's not just good for kids, it's good for all of us. I kind of appreciate this morning one of our men saying, Pastor, where are the lights? We have a light out in the nursery. Instead of saying, hey, Pastor, by the way, some people sit in the dark for 6 months waiting for someone to change the light. Never write a note, never tell anyone, just sit there in the dark waiting for it to change. Hey, folks, we're a small church, there is no staff. There's me and you and Pastor, where are the light bulbs? I mean, he went and got a light bulb, changed the light out. What is that? That's taking initiative. How about teachers? How about decorating your class? How about bus workers? If the bus doesn't fill itself, you've got to get out and knock the doors. You've got to find the kids. You've got to put the work into it and make it happen. You've got, and soul winning, we've got to make the effort. We can't just blow it off and say, well, I won't go this week. It's not going to matter. We've got to have the effort. We've got to take the initiative. If we want to be leaders, then you've got to have initiative. Well, here's another thought. Industry, character, initiative. Number four, consistency. Verse 21, it says, and in every work. Now, you're circling a lot of words here, but you might mark the word every. Every work. Not just in some works that he was most interested in, but in every work. He gave the same effort to everything that he did. Benjamin Disraeli was the Prime Minister of England. He said, the secret of success is consistency of purpose. Consistency of purpose. The best salesman doesn't have one big sale. The best salesman is the guy who is consistently making sales. So what if some athlete, one night in his life, scores 40 points? And the rest of the time, he's riding the boards. He's on the bench. Well, I had a 40-point night. So what? Give me the guy that scores 20 points every night. Well, I, you know, have the one running back. He gets the highlight reel one time. He scored a touchdown. Give me Emmett Smith busting through the line down after down after down after down. Consistency is the mark of greatness. The best preachers aren't those that have one excellent sermon, but those who bring their best effort to each and every sermon year round. The best teacher doesn't have one good lesson. He or she brings it to the classroom each and every week. Doesn't mail it in. Doesn't say, it doesn't matter anymore. But they work at it and they try and they're hardworking and they're consistent. The best employee doesn't say, well, I had one good day this year. Man, the best employee says, I had one bad day this year. All the rest were good days. Consistency. In every work that he began, he did it with all of his heart. Number five is consecration. Verse 21 says, and in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, and in the law and in the commandments to seek his God. Notice that Hezekiah was a man whose heart sought after the Lord. He began in the service of the house of God. He was seeking his God. He was consecrated. He was genuinely spiritual. And I wish I could tell you that everyone who comes to church is genuinely spiritual. The fact is, many people who come to church come because they have to or feel they have to, and they're really not interested in the things of God. Not really. He was genuinely spiritual. Hezekiah was living for a greater purpose than his own life and kingdom and wealth and prosperity. He was putting God first, and because he put God first, God added unto him all these things. Number six, he was conscientious. It says, and in the law and in the commandments to seek his God, he did it with all his heart and prospered. Now, Hezekiah did not have the whatever mentality so common today. Whatever. Preacher, we just want to come to church and relax and be happy. We don't want to be interested in things about responsibilities and doctrines and the finer points of the Word of God. But Hezekiah was seeking out the law and the commandments. He wanted to make sure that things were done right. The word conscientious means wishing to do what is right, especially to do one's work or duty well and thoroughly. Wishing to do what's right, especially one's work or duty well and thoroughly. Hezekiah was not half-baked. Hezekiah did nothing halfway. Hezekiah was thorough. Hezekiah did his duties. Hezekiah desired to do what was right. He wanted the worship to be done right. He wanted God's laws to be obeyed. He was interested in national laws, religious laws, moral laws. He wanted to live by God's commandments. He wanted to have a good conscience. Now, what did Paul say? He said, I have lived before God in good conscience to this day. Oh, for some conscientious Christians. Not a shallow thinking, shallow living Christianity. Arrogant and condescending to those who disagree, but just full of ignorance and yet arrogant about it. Conscientious Christians look carefully at things. They want to be precise. They care about the Scriptures. They care about having a good conscience. They care about being right with God. And because of that, they prosper. One last thing, number seven, and hope everyone can wake up for this last point. Wholeheartedness. He did it with all his heart and prospered. The word wholehearted means completely and sincerely devoted, determined, or enthusiastic. He did it with all his heart. You know, I've watched athletes gets in a game and they think, well, there's not much point in trying anymore, and they check out. Mentally, physically, check out of the game. And I've seen Christians do the same thing. They started out with their heart in it, and then later on they get bored with or get a little beat up, and they check out. Oh, they're still there. They're still in the class, they're still in that ministry, still in their spot. But mentally, in their heart, in their soul, they have checked out of it, and they're no longer putting all their heart into it. Hezekiah did it with all of his heart. The best Sunday school teachers are those who put their heart into it. You can learn the Bible as you go along. You can learn all sorts of things about being a teacher, but all that does is affect your mind. It doesn't affect your heart. You can't make someone have a heart that's involved in what they're doing. When I was asking Elizabeth if she would like to teach one of the classes, well, I think I would like to do it. I'm not sure if I could do it. I said, well, would you be excited about it? Would you want to do it? Because if you don't want to do it, I don't want you teaching. But if you really want to, I know you'll do a good job if you really want to. When people put their heart into it, they do a good job. But when we check out of it and our heart's no longer in it, we're just punching a time clock. We're mailing it in. We're like the employee that's it's an hour till quitting time, but we're going to surf until the very end. And we're not, listen, God deserves better than that. God deserves all that we have. He deserves those who do it with all their heart. Hezekiah was a young man, but he prospered in God's blessings. And I believe these seven characteristics will still lead to success and prosperity today. Industry, character, initiative, consistency, consecration, conscientiousness, wholeheartedness. 3,000 years later, they still bring blessings from a God who has not changed from Hezekiah's day to today.